Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. Tongue firmly in cheek. You guys know the drill. I'm always pumped to do the show. It's fun. But I'm pumped for today's show because there is, as we've been saying over and over and over, right? There is no shortage of things to talk about. Just when you think you're running out of stuff, new things pop up. And I was telling the people on KTTH what a departure this is typically from summers. And I think back to two summers ago, obviously last summer, COVID year, different ballgame. But the summer before that, I remember really having to dig deep and comb through things. And this is typically the case in financial markets during summers. But it was just, you know, you go through that doldrum, right? You go through those doldrums of just not a lot going on. And, you know, volumes drop. You can see it on the exchange. This summer could not be any different from that. I mean, literally, I was telling, again, on the opening three-minute segment, I was telling them, you know, prepping for a show today is just more like filtering. There's 18 million different things we could discuss. There's new news coming out constantly. Movements in markets, individual stock. I mean, there's so many things to discuss. It really is a wild world out there as far as markets and macroeconomics are concerned. And that's kind of one of the things here, right, is we want to point those out to you. We want to point out the things that you're not going to hear on CNBC. We're going to point out the things, you know, what we're used to looking at in financial media is markets through the lens of a journalist. And that's kind of a problem, right? Yeah, they know more than the average person about investing and financial markets. But, and again, I'm not trying to make myself over important. I'm just, and I'm sure you guys would all get this. Being a journalist and observing has absolutely nothing in common with actually navigating markets and managing money. It just doesn't. We're not looking at the same things. We're not paying attention to the same things. The same things don't bother us. The same things don't excite us. It's just a completely different ballgame. It was actually reminds me of a conversation. Same could be said, and this isn't a shameless plug, but shame could be said of money managers versus a typical advisor. And you guys know what I started at advisory firms. I will tell you the vast majority of these advisors are great people that mean the best, but they're not money managers. I hear all the time people say, who's managing my money? And then I look at their portfolios. They're in a typical advisory firm with an advisory fee and mutual funds. They're not managing your money. They're allocating you the same way they're allocating every other client. And they base it based on historical returns, right? They put 10% in emerging markets because it's averaged 13.5%. And they build this graph based on historical performances. Right? So they get lumped in together, but they couldn't be further from the truth. They couldn't be further for the same. As a matter of fact, I've seen a lot of portfolios managed by advisors that were just, and I'll be honest with you, most portfolios I've seen managed by advisors are disasters, right? If they're the ones picking the individual funds. And anyway, it kind of reminds me of that comparison between, you know, again, money managers and journalists. And so we're trying to point out the things behind the scenes. We're trying to not talk about what's happening, right? But what's going to happen? Because that's where the value is, right? That's where the opportunity lies. So I am excited to bring this show to you today because we've got, again, this was, I've got a whole list here. I'm going to try to get through it. We're going to do, okay, and then the other thing I want to talk about was the interview scenario. This is, as rich as this summer has been for content on financial stuff and investing, it's been that difficult on the interview segment, and I'm not really sure why. Just keep passing each other. We had Tobias Carlyle locked in to come in and talk valuations today. apparently he thought he was locked in for next Friday, and he is at Bass Lake with the fam. And I gave him a Bass Lake, man. I didn't picture you as much of an angler, right? And he laughed. He now just up there with the fam, you know, doing the lake stuff. But anyway, so we've got that coming next week. So we've gone this stretch, right, not being able to dial in an interview. Next week we have two, because we're also launching our new interview series called Deep Dive. And I want to explain that a little bit. The purpose of this show when we started out, you guys, is, the purpose of the show was kind of to get our philosophy out there and explain what we're seeing and hopefully get new clients from it. And you've heard people say this before, but to be in that situation is kind of a different ballgame. I'm truly humbled by, you know, you just hop in front of a mic and start, you know, telling stuff that you think is interesting. And the fact that, you know, through the broadcast of the show and the podcast, I think we have clients in 32 different states. And let's just put it this way. When we started it, I didn't think that this would be where we ended up. But one of the things I've heard over and over and over again is, Zach, we love the fact that you attack complex issues and make them relatable and understandable to the layman. And that was the that was the original mission of the show. And they said, but we'd like to hear you kind of take the handcuffs off, and we'd like to hear you have interviews with other guys that manage money and other professionals and deep dive and not feel like you're constantly trying to translate. You know, we want to go deeper into the weeds and you know, kind of take the handcuffs off. Well, that sounded like a blast to me, because I do like teaching and I like educating people. And more importantly, I've always despised how the financial industry kind of, you know, speaks in its esoteric terms, right? That you know, we've talked about this before, right? The expert kind of talk, you know, the way they take something really simple and dress it up with all this complex language. And everybody's like sitting there going, boy, those guys are smart. When in all reality, it's just the clever use of a thesaurus, right? Using eight words when one could do. And they appreciate that. But at the same time, you know, I've always wanted to dive, you know, you know, sometimes I don't want to have to stop and explain, and you just kind of want to let it rip. So we're going to start a new interview series where we let it rip, where we're not translating. So for those of you that you know, enjoy the update aspect of this and the practical aspect of it, I hope you enjoy these interviews. You may not. Just want to give you a warning. But I also just thought it'd be something fun, because a lot of those conversations I've had with these guys behind closed doors, and truthfully, it's always fun to do it on air and to record it, because it always adds a different element to it. It really does. Makes it a little more intense, and you know, usually better content, better flow comes out of that. So we'll be launching that. That is not going to be nearly as regular. You know, I'm thinking like one of those a month, maybe. But hopefully you guys will get something out of that. So anyway, kind of a long warm up, and then I'll kind of lay out the format of today's show. We're going to have, again, an extended market update, because there is so much to discuss. And then we will go through the rest of the show. We've got two really good segments that I want to add to the market update. And then we're going to do the same thing we did last week. Kind of surprised me. We got a lot of feedback about that. Because we don't have an interview here, I'm going to do another deep dive segment after the regular show is recorded. Probably lasts somewhere between 25 to 40 minutes, depending on how long it takes us to cover the content. But hopefully you guys enjoy that. And like I said, I was kind of surprised the feedback we got, because I thought it'd be a bummer, right, that we weren't doing an interview. And a lot of people liked it. So hopefully you guys will enjoy this again. And I'll give you a little teaser. Now, remember, guys, you can only access that after-hour segment through the podcast, okay, because we only have the one air hour here on the show. But the reason that it's kind of fun to do it just via the podcast is I'm not as handcuffed. I mean, we still got to, you know, I'm still a legal fiduciary and I can't give stock. But, you know, it's not on the radio, so I don't cuss or, you know, it's just, you're not dealing with breaks and things like that. It's just easier to free flow. So anyway, I hope it's valuable. But the first guest that we're going to have on for the deep dive that we're scheduled to record with this next Friday is a very special, been a friend and a mentor for me for several decades. And whether he knows it or not, He has had a part to play in my development, both personal, morally, and in business, and has been a really good sounding board for me. But he's got incredible insight into the intellectual, or excuse me, the mental side of investing, the mental side of training, trading, and because it is a mental game, right? And I'm just excited to talk to him, both because, again, as a mentor, as somebody who I've looked up to for decades, that has been very kind and generous with his time and has helped me get where I am. It kind of give you guys an insight of one of the people that's been seminal in forming my world outlook, my work ethic, right down to how I raise my kids and how I want my marriage to work. And he's had his equally a big impact on the business side as well. And an incredible guy, incredible speaker, incredible person. And I really look forward to sharing that with you next week. I'm not going to tell you who it is. You probably never heard of him. Some of you maybe have. But anyway, I'm excited about that. And the other thing about this interview that I think is exciting is even if you're not into investing and even if you're not into trading, you're going to want to hear this interview because it'll make you better at life. It really will. And I actually feel myself getting a little touch emotional about it. I'm not sitting here crying, but I've known this guy since I was 14 years old, 15 years old. Anyway, I'm just excited to have him on. It's going to be fun to have him in my world. And then also for him to kind of see, you know, he knows what I do. We get together on a pretty regular basis and play golf and talk. And it's usually prompted by me by wanting his advice. And to his credit, he's always kind enough to lend it. But anyway, you're just not going to want to miss it. Anytime the guy talks, I want to hear it, even though he's a good personal friend of mine. So I'm really excited about bringing this one to you. And like I said, it's got to be a surprise. It's the first one. It's got to be a surprise. So that was a long introduction. Why don't we cut it off right here for the opening, and then we'll address the next segment, which will be about 8 minutes long. We should be able to get through most of the market update by then. As always, guys, you know, if you've been listening to us, you like what's going on, you want to know more about how we do things without making any commitments or getting locked in or people twisting your arm or any of that garbage, just give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can get our Common Sense Investing booklet. You can get information about our portfolios. We don't hide anything. We'll show you the performance cost, all that kind of stuff. You guys know the drill. You can also follow me at KYR Radio on Twitter, at KYR Radio, Know Your Risk Radio, KYR Radio on Twitter. And then, like I said, obviously, if you want to hear the after hour segment, if you want to have access to the interview next week, which, and he's not in the financial business. He engages in it roundabout way, advises people in the financial advisory or the financial business and the money management business. But if you want access to that interview, which, like I said, if you want to get better at life, you're going to want to hear this one. It's going to have financial aspects to it. It's also going to have, you know, managing your mind aspects, disciplined routines, all that kind of stuff. You're going to want to sign up for the podcast. So Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast and just subscribe. It doesn't lock you into anything. They just email, they notify you when new episodes have come out, and then you can listen to them at your own convenience. You just click the link in your email. Boom, there you go. So anyway, you guys know the drill. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. Stick with us. This is the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently, one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's Bond Replacement Strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right, now let's get into the market update. A lot of updates in the last segment. Usually, right, the first segment's market update, but we had to have some housekeeping. We're starting the new interview series here, which I'm excited about. Anyway, so markets, you know, I had a client portfolio review this morning, and I told him, I go, you know, every once in a while, you know, when you make a prediction, right, or you think something's going to happen, in this business, you might tilt that way, but you don't load up. Just because that's a good way to lose money, you're going to be wrong. You know, not all the time, but you know, when you're guessing about what, you know, what GDP print's going to be, and or you know, whatever the case may be, whether earnings are going to be good. Great investors don't make money because they get those things right. Great investors make more money than everybody else because when they get them right, they make more money. And when they get them wrong, they lose less or they don't lose at all, right? That's the way that works. And I was joking with a client of mine that, you know, over the last year, well, pretty much this entire year, especially for the last 3 or 4 months, we've been saying over and over that we very much have a view on what's going to work. We had a very strong view on natural resources, oil, value going into this year. That has definitely played out. But we also talked about how it was going to be a knife fight, were the exact words we used. We said it was going to be a knife fight between value and tech and growth, because tech and growth has dominated for so long that there's a muscle memory built into the market. When that stuff goes down, you're going to see bids coming into it because it's down. Right, because that buy the dip has worked for over a decade, and it is right. It is independent of valuations. You have a market that is flooded with more retail money than any time in history, which means that as of now, right, as of right now, valuations mean less than anything. Stock market's more of a popularity contest, and so these are all the things that we've been saying for the last year, and you know, certainly the last 6-8 months, pretty much for most of the last year. And I was laughing with the client where I was like, you know, we ended up being more right than we wanted to be. And he goes, what do you mean? And I go, well, it's been a 3.5 month knife fight. And if you're paying attention, you can see it sometimes on a 4 or 5 day cycle. You can see it on a weekly cycle. You can actually see it day to day, right? You've got this kind of crazy right now today. We're seeing it again. NASDAQ's up 0.11%. Russell 2000's up 0.86. Those things are literally seem to move counter to each other. If NASDAQ's up big, Russell 2000's up small, or it's negative. That knife fight continues. Now, what's interesting about it right now is it looks like the value in the natural resource stuff is reaccelerating again, which I would expect it to be the case. And there's a few reasons why. One of them, and again, I don't want to rehash stuff that we've already gone over at great length. But one of them, if we just look at oil, right, there has been an incredible amount of supply destruction. Additionally, some of the steps that the new administration has taken are probably going to be price positive for energy and commodities, as long as those regulations and that legislation and those policies are in place. And then, like I said, there was supply destruction, right? There was just a litany, especially in the smaller realm and mid-size realm, of energy companies that went out of business last year. Kind of hard to make money when the thing you sell goes negative $37 a barrel, right? So that has really thinned the herd. And because of that meltdown, which makes sense, you're not seeing new capital flood in there. So that new supply or that traditional supply, it's not coming back online. And we've been telling you that for months. American Airlines put out an announcement this week of asking their pilots to be unusually cautious and unusually conscious of saving fuel wherever they can because they see the beginnings of a serious fuel shortage. I don't know how that's not going to happen. But again, that's more fuel, pardon the pun, more fuel for this further bounce in energy. And I just continue, and again, I'm not trying to pick a direction. I'm not telling you to get involved in oil. I'm not telling you to get involved. I'm not doing any of that. But I just look at the oil price, the oil markets, the amount of storage we have, the amount of inventory we have, all those different kinds of things, supply destruction, all the different things that we've talked about. I look at all that and I just think, you've got a setup where if something happens geopolitically, oil could just rip. And I'm talking 140, 150 a barrel, maybe higher. Not saying that's going to happen. It just feels to me like a loaded spring. The other interesting thing to me, like I said, is that that could roll for a while because you don't turn supply, something like oil, you don't turn it on with a light switch. You can turn it off with a light switch. Right, kind of like the economy in general. Turning it on is a bit more tricky proposition. So, I continue to think that value side of things, the energy side of things, the natural resource side of things, is something that you need to be overweight. Again, that's not a recommendation. Maybe you shouldn't have any exposure to it. I got to be careful about what I say. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, especially myself. And then, like I said, guys, the other attractive part of that is it's one of the cheapest parts of the entire market, right? Just, you know, so not only are we buying things with the secular winds behind them, but they're also really cheap. Okay, so now for time constraints, we got to cut this segment off right here, but we're going to come back. Obviously, we just got rolling into the market update, so we're going to come back. We're going to finish the rest of it. A lot of different things to pick from. As always, if you want to sit down with us, get a copy of our free booklet, Common Sense Investing, How We Lower Your Fees, Drastically Lower Your Risk, Increase Your Upside, call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, or capitalmanagement.com. Follow me on Twitter at @KYRRadio. If you want to give midweek thoughts, jokes, that kind of stuff, typically, well, 95% of the time it's market-based, but kind of get our thoughts through the week, and hopefully you'll give us a follow there. As always, subscribe to the podcast to get the after-hour segment we're going to do today and future interviews. You guys know the drill. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
As we age, we can't always plan on good health, but you can plan long-term care coverage to give peace of mind to you and your family. Story Monson, a great way to learn about long-term care and have your questions answered is to join my friends from 525 Advisors for their free long-term care planning live webinar Wednesday, August 11th at 3 p.m. You will learn so much. They'll explain how long-term care works, what the coverage pays for, and you'll discover all the new options and different ways to fund a plan. Then when you're ready, 525 Advisors will do what they did with my wife and me.
They will sit down, design a custom plan with you. Brian Ott, Madeline, they're just great. Our plan even has lifetime benefits that pay our estate back if we never use it. So I love the time they spent with us. You will learn so much. Get great peace of mind, long-term care coverage that 525 Advisors gave my wife and me. Sign up now for the free live webinar Wednesday, August 11th, 3 p.m. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right, so let's, no further ado. If you've hung with me this far, thank you. I know, unusual amount of housekeeping stuff, but we're going to get right into it. So the other big news, markets this week, guys, we're still kind of in that range. If you were to ask me what we're looking at here from all the indexes, we're certainly on the breakout side of things still. But we're still not seeing that thrust. We're still not seeing that takeoff. So I think caution. Again, if this was on a scale, right? Markets continue to go up, markets go down. It's bullish. You've got to be tilted to the bullish side. You're just not seeing the follow through that you typically see here. So I think there's still some caution warranted. And there's some key levels. I think for the S&P, it's 14,200. As long as you stay above that, you're in trend. You break below that, you haven't broken the trend, but you're kind of in no man's land. So, you know, as long as we stay above that level on the NASDAQ, why do I point only to the NASDAQ? Because the disproportionate weight, I mean, you know, we could focus on the S&P 500, but essentially the S&P 500 is going to move in the same direction as the NASDAQ. You know, you could see days here or there where it breaks apart, but because of the size and valuation of those NASDAQ companies, they're swinging it. A couple interesting things came out. Everybody's talking about the miss in GDP. So growth numbers for the second quarter this year came out. GDP, I think we were at 6.5%, 6.4%, if I've got that right. It missed expectations. And I heard some people go, oh, here comes the slowing of the economy. Listen, back when COVID started, I said something again that I think I was reminded of today that it was another one of those things where you're like, oh, that's kind of a hit. I just saw that. Amazon down 5% in after hours. Oh, and we are recording on Thursday again. This time, not my fault. The fearless millennial, Darren, had a little summer vacay. And so we had to record on Thursday. So I'm assuming Friday's probably going to be ugly for Amazon. I wouldn't read too much into the price movement. I know Facebook announced blowout earnings yesterday. Price of their stock got hit by like 3 to 5% because they said growth was going to decelerate, which I thought was kind of, I know a lot of people hate Facebook, but Facebook is one of the very few tech companies out there that is killing it and is not insanely overvalued at all. I actually think it's cheap. I don't like Zuckerberg. I don't think Facebook is overall a good thing for the, I'm not making that comment. I'm just approaching it from a financial standpoint. So we got to see the fall through Amazon, but that kind of tilts a little bit more. It's going to be, you're seeing this trend here. Amazon getting hit after earnings, Facebook getting hit after earnings. Those are the big dogs. It's yet more ammo why we say the NASDAQ's not out of the woods. And if the NASDAQ isn't out of the woods, then the broader indexes aren't either. So again, still pushing toward the, like I said, the bullish side. I mean, you look at the chart, the trends are in place, but there are certainly some concerns. Now, as it relates to GDP, getting back to that conversation, I thought back to something that we were saying last summer. And that was, look, here's what we think is going to happen. But truth be told, all these people making these prognostications, in all reality, we're probably not going to know where this economy is until halfway through next year. So this year, which we're about halfway through it, right? A little more than halfway through. And maybe well into the end of the year and the beginning of 2022. And I think that still stands true today. Why do I say that? First of all, and I've got some great examples to back this up. First of all, the economy is not operating on its own, right? We all know that. It's being flooded with cash. So it's really hard to tell where that kicks in and real economic growth, you know, isn't, you know what I mean? If we look at, for instance, if we look at positive earnings in a 6.5, now to give you an idea of how big 6.5% is for the quarter, we haven't had a GDP read for a quarter that big since 1983. Okay, now that's the good news. The bad news is, like I said, we missed the targets. I think most economists had it pegged to like 7.5 or 8%, something like that. So we had a miss on expectations, and that's brought some of the people out of the woodwork saying, "Oh, this is the beginning of the slowdown." I don't think that's the case, and I'll tell you why. And when I say I don't think that's the case, I don't think the economy's healthy. I'm not saying that. But I don't think that that's the case, that this is the beginning of a quote-unquote slowdown, because, again, we all know the supply chain story. If you've tried to buy anything, God forbid if you're trying to remodel a house like we currently are. I think I told you guys that story. We're doing the COVID remodel, but it had nothing to do with COVID. We actually started planning this remodel about 2 years ago. So it just, our great luck, it just so happens to coincide with, you know, one of the greatest pinches and greatest explosions of the price of lumber. Anyway, but with all that noise in there, did we really miss growth expectations, or were those purchases that just weren't able to happen? You know, I'll give you an example. I'm waiting on tile for as much as, or excuse me, granite for as much as 3, 4, maybe even 5 weeks. A transaction doesn't happen until that goes through. So personally, there's a lot of people out there talking about a slowdown in Q3 and Q4. I don't really think that's going to happen. I think that again, I think that the supply constraints are kind of muting GDP growth for now. And I think that those purchases are, I'm still going to purchase that granite, right? I'm still going to get that shower redone, right? A lot of people are like, they want to spend the money. They just got to wait for it. So again, I'm going to stick to what we were saying a year ago, that there's still too much noise to have a really good economic picture. It's just, like I said, it's hard to know where the economy is kicking in and whether or not that, what we think the economy kicking in, whether that's just completely stimulus driven. And there's no way to parse it out. There's just no way. We're not going to know for quite some time. So we got to keep an eye on that side of it. We got to keep a close eye on these GDP prints. They matter. But we also got to keep in mind there's going to be a lot of noise around those numbers for a really long time. And here's a perfect example. If we look at, let's see. Yeah. So if we look at I'm trying to remember where this comp was. It was either a year ago quarter last year, right? That first third quarter of last year where we were just starting to come out, right? And growth really started accelerating to the upside. I think we had record growth in a quarter because they turned the economy back on. Either that or it was the fourth quarter of 2019. Anyway, either or. The GDP print that we just received, okay, came in 1% higher. And I believe it was the fourth quarter of 2019. Came in 1% higher than it did back then. Was the GDP print? I should have written that down. Anyway, here's my point. Whatever it is, whether it was the third quarter of last year or the fourth quarter of 2019, GDP for this quarter came in 1% higher. Gross domestic product, so the total output of our economy, came in 1% higher, even though as of today we have 7 million more unemployed. You know, I'm not going to make a Chicken Little assessment and tell you that means everything's about to come crashing down. Again, I don't know that. What it tells us, though, is that, again, to my point, we don't know what is real growth in terms of consumers making purchasing decisions, making investment decisions, versus what is just stimulus driven. And we're just not going to know until that stimulus rolls off. Other one everybody's talking about is that legislation, that moratorium against evictions is coming up here pretty soon. I want to say in a month or something like that. I think it's the end of August, beginning of September, somewhere in there. Look, I'll tell you my take on it. Whatever that is, it's going to get renewed. That's my take. If the federal government doesn't do something about it, which I just cannot envision, I just don't think it's politically feasible. I'm not talking about whether it's right or not. I don't want to make that assessment here. Doesn't mean I think it is. Doesn't mean I think it isn't. Don't read into that. And the reason why I say don't read into it, guys, is that I've got an opinion, but that opinion would take 20 to 30 minutes to explain. So I'm not saying whether that's right or not. I'm just saying what is going to happen, Right? What is the one thing that the government and the Federal Reserve have proven that they're not willing to let happen? They're not willing to let the stock market go down, and they're not willing to let asset prices go down. Right? If you don't get that by now, I don't know what to tell you. Right? So bottom line is we just have to wait and see. And I really don't – we've spent a lot of time trying to handicap that. You just can't. There's just too much noise. It's incomparable to any other period. It's a blender. And I think a lot of that, honestly, in some ways, I think the valuations are insane. But the movements of the market this summer, I think, are fairly reflecting that uncertainty. That, you know, that we don't know which way to bet. Is it going to be the value stuff and the commodity stuff because of inflation? Is the economy going to decelerate so the tech and growth stocks are good again and interest rates are going to fall? And you're just having this knife fight trying to sort that out. The way I look at it, and this is why I've thought, you know, playing the value side of it and the commodity side of it, this is why I've thought that that was going to be a volatile road, probably more volatile than going tech and growth, at least in the short term. But I think it's going to be the best one going forward. And here's why. If you get those deflationary scares, right, you get those growth scares, we already know the playbook. And whether it happens in the next 6 months or whether it happens in 2.5 years, I think how this cycle ends is very clear. And that, interestingly enough, is going to be the topic of our after hours conversation today, which you can only get on the podcast. But we're going to talk about the pressure point that we see growing and when that pressure point might reveal itself. And what we think the opportunity with that pressure point is. Because rest assured, no cycle lasts forever. And if we know that this, we're in a cycle that is driven by printed money and central banks and government handouts and stimulus and all that kind of stuff, that can really continue for a really long time, because in the world of fiat currency that we currently live in, there is no real constraint to how much money they print. Now, you'd say inflation, yes, but when? So we're going to talk about that pressure point and how that stuff's going to come to the head. Another one that we noticed that you know, this one I wrote nothing new under the sun. Really interesting information came out about credit markets. And let me ask you if this sounds familiar. We now have $1 trillion in CLOs, which are collateralized loan obligations. Okay, and basically that's where they take a bunch of different loans, package them together, and create a security out of it, right? Think about credit, you think about the whole mortgage-backed security thing, very same thing, but this is with collateralized loan obligations, essentially corporate debt. Now, of that $1 trillion in CLOs, virtually none of the bonds, none of that corporate debt inside of those CLOs is investment grade. Okay, an investment grade, I think the floor on investment grade is BBB. If I'm correct. And yet 60% of those collateralized loan obligations are rated AAA. Does that sound familiar? And that's why I wrote nothing new under the sun. Right? Everywhere you look, you see signs of excess. The catch is when do governments and central banks let it go? Right? And I mean, if you've been listening to me for a while, you know I'm not one of these economic cheerleaders that's telling you everything's rosy and just to buy stocks and it's so great and all that kind of stuff. I'm not. But I'm just telling you that when things go bust, it's because nobody wants to buy them. You got the Federal Reserve sitting there with an infinite pile of cash buying everything if they need to, right? They bought, what did they buy? $683 billion worth of corporate debt last year with printed money. And that's why this stuff's so hard to handicap, you know? Yeah, fundamentally, do I want to touch that? No. Does that mean it's ready to collapse? No, because if the Fed steps in and starts buying it, you know, there it goes. And that gets us back to our pressure point. I don't want to overpump that, but that's why I felt like it was important to do that conversation today in the after hours to really kind of lay that idea out. Another one we've had, really interesting, the Robinhood IPO. I don't want to give any recommendations. I would advise people to stay away from that. I think news could drop at any moment. I like to stay away from the poster childs of moves, right? Especially this late in the cycle. That's not a recommendation one way. If you want to buy Robinhood, that's fine. I wouldn't buy it with your money, but you know, I would at least encourage people to exercise caution. Another one. We had some good laughs about this a while ago. Remember Nikola? It was going to be the Tesla killer, right? Turns out that it was just it was a Potemkin village. They showed videotape of their semi truck, their fully electric semi truck driving down a road. Find out later that it didn't even have an engine in it, that it had a grade on the road, and the way they filmed it made it look like it wasn't downgrade, and the truck was literally coasting. He has been indicted on 3 charges of stock manipulation and fraud. And right on, interestingly enough, right on the tails of that announcement, the SEC also announcing that they have reopened a similar investigation into, guess who? Elon Musk and Tesla for stock manipulation. Now, that doesn't mean that this is over for Elon. He's been in a lot of sticky situations. But I know that there are probably listeners out there that think Elon is the next second coming. And we've been telling you all along, there's a lot of hair on this thing. That should at least give us a little bit of credibility that we're not making this stuff up. It's just, you know, even you get down to their recent quarterly announcement of, oh, another profitable year, blah, blah, blah. You got to dig into the statements with these guys. There were some really clever accounting tricks and some really unbelievable numbers. For instance, they showed an increase in gross profit on their vehicles when virtually every single one of one of the necessary inputs and materials to go in the car have skyrocketed in price. We all saw a collapse in research and development spending. And so everybody touts these profits and nobody takes the time to look underneath the hood. I still see a company that is operationally cash flow negative. And I see a company that's putting up some very questionable financials. They're claiming they have 28% gross profit in their vehicles. And yet every single quarter in order to hit numbers, they're drastically lowering costs of vehicles. If your demand was as high as they claim it is, right? And you were throwing out 28% profit, why are you cutting prices of your vehicles? Again, not accusing them of fraud. I don't have a smoking gun. I don't have proof. Just the SEC is interested. Let's put it that way. Okay, now what else? So that's about it. That's about it for the market update. We finally got through it. That was an extended segment. We're going to come back. We're going to do one more segment, and then we're going to bring in the after hours stuff. So stick with us. As always, guys, if you're interested, if you want somebody that is actively managing your portfolio, that is looking for opportunities, if you want to know how our stock portfolios last year were down less than 12%, even though the market was down 36, and we still finished up higher than the S&P 500 did last year. If you want to know how we're handily outperforming the S&P again this year, even though we avoided the risk last year, if you want to know how we can drastically reduce the risk, the cost of your portfolio while providing, you guys know the drill. Call us, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. I'm not going to keep boring you with the same old, same old. Anyway, stick with us. We'll be right back for the final segment. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
How do you know your finances and investments right now in today's economy are positioned for a successful retirement? Well, join me at Zach Abraham's Know Your Risk Virtual Roadshow Thursday, July 22nd, right after my show. Zach, I'm excited to be there.
Dory, we've taken Bulwark's entire investment and retirement planning process, the same one you and Suzanne went through, and we've condensed it down into a 30-minute class. We'll answer all the big questions. Do you need estate planning? Long-term care? When should you take Social Security? How much money do you need to retire? And we're also going to show everyone who attends how to protect their portfolio against loss while still growing their assets.
Join me at the Know Your Risk Virtual Roadshow with Zach Abraham, Thursday, July 22nd, right after my show at 3. Sign up now at KnowYourRiskRadio.com. You'll get a free copy of Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing, too. Space is limited for this free live webinar. Reserve now at KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. All right, so I saved this segment for last. I found this a fascinating topic. And this goes right into why we are believers in the natural resources. And again, it's not holy. We keep well diversified all the time. But we're overweight. What does that mean when I say we're overweight these types of things? What it means is we look at the market, for instance, I believe the S&P 500 has 11 different sectors, right? You got consumer discretionary, you got technology, you got energy, you know, you got all these consumer cyclicals. You got these 11 different segments. And when we look at the S&P, we look at the weighting of those segments. So for instance, coming into this year, I believe energy stocks made up like 2.5 to 3% of the total value of the S&P 500. They historically average about 11. Okay, so way low. If the S&P's average weighting, if the value of all the energy companies is added together and it makes up 3% of the S&P 500, if I make energy and energy style companies 10% of my portfolio, I am substantially overweight energy. Okay, so when I say we're overweight, I'm not talking we're putting half of our clients' money in oil stocks. What I'm saying is we have a substantially higher exposure than the overall index. Now, that would be true with value stocks, especially a lot of natural resource stocks right now. And I think that's one of the things it's one of the reasons our value portfolio is up 33% on the year, 32.8, something like that. 33, yeah, right in there. Because those things have done really well. They appear to be reaccelerating again, and I think they should. And here's a perfect anecdotal reason why. And it's also going to lead into our after-hours segment. And it also reveals something about the state of the market. So we all know the electric vehicle craze, right? We all know the absurd valuations. And when I say absurd, I know that there are Tesla fans and electric vehicle fans out there who go, what are you talking about? Listen, you may end up being right. You've been right so far on Tesla. Congratulations. What I'm saying is if you look at the underlying valuation of the company and then you look at the actual financial performance of the company, there is a gap a mile wide. Now, you may believe that gap is going to be filled by future innovation that Tesla comes out with. And again, you could be right. But to me, that is investing on faith. When I look at the fact, you know, and the Tesla fans, and I don't mean to pick on Tesla, I'm using this as an example, but the Tesla fans will tell you, well, it's not just a car company. And I go, okay, well, 98% of their revenue comes from selling cars. So that's like saying Lamborghini isn't a car company because they sell a few luxury yachts. It's a ridiculous statement. Now, you may not think it's going to be a car company, but if a company makes 98% of its revenue doing one thing, that's what kind of company it is, okay, period. Everything else is smoke and mirrors. Everything else is the promise of future business, right? It doesn't matter. Okay, so we all know the craziness in that. You know, Nikola getting up to a $50 billion market cap, the whole thing was a joke, right? So we know the investor appetite for electric vehicles. Now, here's what's really interesting, and I think this says a lot about the market. The average electric vehicle is going to use 5 times the amount of copper that is used in traditional vehicles. If this electric car revolution is going to be as big and prolific as everybody says it is, I'm looking at a big discrepancy over here with copper. Now, let me clarify something. I think that the electric vehicle revolution is going to be as prolific as everybody's going to say. The cars last longer, right? They're quieter. They don't emit emissions. Here's my thing. I just, first of all, think for a variety of different reasons that transition is going to take a lot longer than the sycophantic electric vehicle bulls think it is. But even a dislocation like that provides a big opportunity. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if the valuations of these electric car, these electric vehicle makers are justified, and if they're going to reach the pinnacles that all the bulls say they're going to reach, why aren't they buying copper? Yeah, copper's got a nice pop, but historically it's still relatively cheap. Nobody wants copper miners, right? That's not what's popular. It's not tech. It's not growth, man. And mining's bad for the environment. Well, yeah, but you're the one pushing electric vehicles, which require a ton of cobalt and a ton of copper. You got to go mine that from somewhere. There isn't a software program that can make commodities. Right? So that's got to come from somewhere. And I keep looking around the world like that, and I see these opportunities. Everybody's like, oh, you got to invest in the electric. I'm looking at the – look, if electric vehicles are going to be as successful as you say they're going to be, that's already priced into the stock times 10. I want to look where everybody isn't looking. I want to look where we can find the generational opportunities. And it's just so – that's the interesting thing to me about the natural resource space right now and the value stock space in general. Not only do I see things moving that way, but it's also the cheapest segment of the entire market. And then when you look at these – and again, I think it shows kind of the irrationality involved in the market. How is it if electric vehicles are what you think they're going to be, why are you not also buying copper? Furthermore, I got on a limb and tell you that I think if you invest in the natural resources that are used by electric vehicles, I think you're going to blow away the performance of the electrical vehicle stocks themselves. Not because they're not going to do really well. It's because it's already priced in. The traditional automobile manufacturers are trading at like, what is it, like 85, 90% of annual revenue. Tesla's trading at 26 times annual. I mean, you've got it priced in. Where's the opportunity? I firmly believe it's on the natural resource side. And like I said, central banks can't print natural resources. Microsoft and Google can't come up with a new program that creates them out of thin air. And that's what's going to lead into our after-hour segment. Where's the pressure point? Where do we see the real opportunity? So, guys, if you want people you want to know how we're lowering costs, lowering risk. If you want an active manager that is watching over your stuff on a day-to-day basis and getting out of the way when things get crazy and doing what we've done. Right? If you think we're moving into that, if you think this is just not a world that you can just throw your money in the stock market and let it ride, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Follow me at KYR Twitter. And don't forget, if you want to hear the after-hours segment, where the pressure relief is, you got to subscribe to the podcast. Google Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. You can find it on Apple iTunes, Stitcher. You guys know the drill. Don't miss it. Anyway, we'll be back next week. We're going to release two interviews next week. You don't want to miss them, but you got to be subscribed to the podcast to get them. Hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Stay out of the heat. Enjoy the sun. We'll be back next week. This is the Know Your Risk Radio Podcast on KXL in Portland, KTTH in Cairo and Seattle. We're out.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.